time for the Garden Conversation, which is underwritten by Jewel Gardens in Skagway in loving memory of Charlotte Jewel and her vision for gardens as a community space for peace, inspiration, and education. Okay, so in the studio today we have Melissa.
Good morning.
And do you want to introduce?
And Liz. And so it's the grandmas that are here today. And we're going to be talking about working with kids and grandkids in the garden. But first on that, the earth moved under my feet.
Uh-huh.
The day right before the earthquake, between the recycling center and my garden, I slept right through the earthquake.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't even feel it. So
it was a loud one.
Yeah, so yeah. I didn't feel the earth move under my feet. That's what gardening will do for you. You'll sleep through earthquakes. Yeah,
yeah, I tell you, it does.
Yeah, so we have three grandmas here today, Grandma Liz, Grandma Joni, and I'm a step-grandma and great-grandmother, actually, which is a frightening thought. And we just wanted to talk a little bit about the ways in which, as parents and grandparents, we can encourage our kids to enjoy gardening and some of the ways to do that and some of the ways to absolutely not do that. So, Liz, you have the darling Annabelle as a granddaughter, and you're having a lot of fun with her, I think, in the garden. What are you doing? What's working?
Well, let's see. She just turned 4, so she was helping me from the get-go, but of course now at 4 she can do so much more. So I'm trying to track her developmentally. That's probably a really important piece in having a successful experience for both the mother or the grandmother and the kid, is to make sure what you're asking the kid to do is what they're capable of, so that they're not frustrated and you're not frustrated. So I'm trying to stay mindful of that. So this year, this spring, Annabelle was able to plant the big seeds. So, and she could poke holes for things like green beans and peas, and they're so ecstatic about the whole experience, which makes me ecstatic.
Did you have her doing any measuring? Obviously, you're not going to measure with a ruler or anything, but for spacing seeds?
I missed that opportunity to have a strict educational thing. I didn't, but that's a great idea, Melissa.
Because you can have just a little stick or something that,
Yeah,
and then developmentally, over the next couple of years, introduce numbers and as it's time.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else did you do with her? What did you learn?
Well, let's see. She did really well at digging up strawberry plants. She could do that really well because, it's okay. It's not a job where you have to be perfect about it. And so creating her own strawberry bed, we had to turn her sandbox. I thought, how are we going to have her give up her sandbox and turn it into a strawberry bed? But I thought if she could help dig up the strawberries, plant them, and eat them, that it would be a good trade-off. Sure enough, it worked.
A great idea. Yeah. So what did you add to the sandbox to make it a good strawberry bed?
Compost and old spent, dirt that we had around. Yep.
Yeah. What a great transition idea.
Yeah. But what we could have used on that job, I just learned, I forget who told me this, another grandmother, I think, that they make these little garden carts. Because I know it would be so cool for Annabelle to get to push her own little cart around. Like she could have carried the starts over and helped bring dirt, because the wheelbarrow is untenable for her. Yeah.
Yeah. And does she have her own little garden tools then?
Everybody's going to do that part differently. But for me, when she was little, when they're 2, they're not that affected. I found that it's not that they're not learning that much about the garden, and they have those plastic tools that don't have real edges, but depends what you're comfortable with. But with supervision, I think little ones can handle a real tool, so a real digger and
so a trowel or something like that works okay with her.
Yeah
okay. I have some plastic kids garden tools, and anybody that's trying to work with a 2-year-old that wants them, get in touch with me, and I'd be glad to pass them on to somebody. So what kinds of things do you think work with her what kinds of things don't. You want to pay attention to developmental levels.
Yeah. The other thing I think is being mindful about, if you're going to have a play date in the garden, make sure that you're, as an adult, comfortable with not being that productive. Because if I'm attached to getting this much done,
right,
I'm going to be disappointed, and the little one's going to be frustrated because it's going to be about me accomplishing things. And as long as I can be clear in my own headspace, like, this is about learning and exploring together. Like the other day, we were in the garden, and I wanted to get some weeds, and Annabelle wanted to dig a hole where I'd already pulled the broccoli plant and make a little pool. And she wanted me to help her, you know, with the little pool she was making. She was making like soup, putting dirt in the pool, and you know, I wanted to do something else. But then I decided, maybe we could do. So I got her to dig weeds to put in the soup. That was pretty clever of me. So we killed two birds with one stone on that one. Yeah, it was a mighty fine soup too.
Okay, a mud soup with weeds.
As a
garnish. Nice.
Yeah.
don't eat at Liz's house. Yeah. Okay, so a couple things you've said here then: to pay attention to developmental stages, to make sure that you're not too task-oriented, that you're actually more enjoying the time with the kids. And when you said that, I just totally flashed to my own experiences as a kid with a mother who was just totally driven by task, 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 and I never enjoyed gardening with her. In fact, I hardly even remember doing it. But with my grandfather, that was a whole different thing, because he could relax and kind of get into the flow with me. And that's where I really learned my love of gardening and composting. That's some of my very earliest memories, or planting carrots and composting with him as, you know, a preschooler, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Joni, what kind of experiences have you had with grandkids and kids?
Well, Liz's story about the sandbox brought to mind this conundrum that I had. I wanted a big greenhouse, but I didn't have space for it because the kids' outdoor toy, which was like a playhouse, slide, swing set, all combined, and they had already outgrown it, you know, but I didn't want to be the one to take it away. And so I talked to them about it, about really wanting this greenhouse, but not having any place for it, and da-da-da. And they said, well, why don't you get rid of the swing set? And I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? So when it was their idea, it was a whole lot easier for me to do, and and so that happened. But another thing, as far as developmental, I've found that when you use pelleted seeds with kids, like the carrots now have pelleted seeds. I think a lot of different veggies do. They're easier for them to handle than the tiny, you know, seeds.
The fine motor skills versus the gross motor skills.
Or the nasturtiums, those seeds are big.
Yeah.
Anytime you
radishes.
Peas and beans, you know, they have big seeds. So anytime you can find bigger seeds that, you know, their little fingers can hold and deal with, it makes it more less frustrating for them.
Yeah. Now, I know some people are gluing carrot seeds onto strips of toilet paper before they plant them in the spring. And that would be, you know, an interesting indoor on a table, glue-resistant table, that could be done. Do you think that that's something a kid could do at 4 or 5?
I don't know.
No.
Toilet paper's it's kind of frail, fragile.
Yeah, the whole process is a little finicky. I think that would be frustrating.
You'd have to figure, I think that she was using like a flour paste or something so that it was, you know,
edible. Flour and water.
Yeah, I actually got some of those from her this year and laid them out. But even just laying them out, you try to lay out toilet paper on a
windy day.
Either a windy day or on a, you know, a wet garden, and it's wet dirt.
Okay.
It's difficult.
Okay, so that's more of an adult.
But then I've always been challenged with things like saran wrap and that kind of stuff anyway. So, you know, don't take my word on it. It was challenging for me.
Okay.
I should put it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to see at the school garden.
Right.
At Marvin's Garden, the kids that are getting involved with all of that and getting going with that early. Another thing I think that helps with kids is to grow things that are going to produce quickly, relatively quickly.
Radishes.
So radishes are great. Yeah. And I have memories of being out with my oldest step-grandson, who's now almost 40. I don't know how that happened. And pulling up a carrot when he was about three. And I made it very, very dramatic, you know, and pulled the carrot up slowly, 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 slowly until this big giant carrot emerged from the garden. And his eyes were huge at that. Yeah. And he still remembers that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We still have, you know, conversations about how much fun that was. So as parents and grandparents, I think we have so much opportunity to help kids really learn to love gardening and to pass that on. And if it's too task oriented, we run the risk, I think, of turning them off.
Yeah.
But if we take the time, like you said, and move away from being task oriented and just have fun with them, then we can pass on the love of gardening, because I think that's important for all of us to remember, is even as adults, is that we want our gardens to be fun. At the point where it becomes way too much work, you know, we burn out.
It's always a lot of work, especially this time of year. But I mean, it's work with a reward. So, you know, for me, the trade-off is worth it.
Yeah. The reward is part, too, for kids is amazing. Like, Annabelle, she absolutely goes crazy for vegetables. She loves peas, she loves green beans, she loves tomatoes, she loves carrots. She loves it all. And like, you can put a plate in front of her and, you know, artfully place the carrot sticks and everything. She is like, I'll tell you an example. The other night for dinner, for dessert, she'll have three gummy bears. Now four, she's four. We ran out of gummy bears. I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? She goes, well, we can cut up some carrots and I can have carrots for dessert.
I want that kid.
Well, and you bring up a great point, going out into the garden with kids and eating things directly off of the plant.
Yeah.
That's just, it's such a thrill.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a thrill for everybody that's learning the garden, to just go out and graze your garden.
My granddaughters were here this summer and they wanted chili, and I said, well, go out to the garden and get the ingredients. And so they picked the the tomatoes, and they put carrots in there and onions and garlic, and it was just
fun.
It was a fun, and they were into it. They were into washing them too, washing the carrots and getting them all ready and cleaned up.
And of course berries are also totally great.
That's the dessert.
Going back to Annabelle, have you ever done anything with like art projects with her where she can use the carrots and cherry tomatoes and things to
make a great idea.
Faces and designs and stuff like that?
If
you have somebody who's a little bit artistically talented, it's amazing what kind of fun things you can do like that. So okay, well, that's kind of the grandma's talking about gardening.
Getting the kids involved.
Yeah. And we have a couple minutes left here, I think. It's also the time to be thinking about getting seaweed onto gardens. And Liz, you use a duff rather than a regular
seaweed. No, I use seaweed, collect a lot of seaweed, and then also some of the finer broken down stuff.
Do you want to just talk about your process of what you do with the seaweed?
That's probably the most meaningful part. You know, you can dump it on your beds once they're harvested, and you know, rain and snow will help bring nutrients into it. But also in the spring, I've always found, I'd be curious as a question for other gardeners, so much it's still there, you got to take it off and then put it in the compost pile, but it's partly decomposed. I don't mind doing that, but I used to do it all on the beds. And now, you know, I'm collecting, I have seaweed on hand, so whenever I'm layering my compost, I'm constantly just putting the seaweed in layers, and it breaks down so fast that way.
Yeah, it doesn't have any lignin in it, so it doesn't really add much in the in terms of volume to compost, but it adds a lot of micronutrients.
Lots of nutrients.
So that's, yeah, that's really important. So I'm doing the seaweed now, too, and I'm putting down green sand before I put the seaweed onto a bed. So green sand, there are different kinds of it that you can get through the different catalogs. It's a whole lot of micronutrients. And I found that if
Microminerals?
Yeah.
Minerals.
Yeah, they're called micronutrients. But it's all kinds of, it's calcium and boron and all of those, you know, not the NPK, which are the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. I put that down first and then the seaweed, and I don't have to fertilize all year.
So that doesn't wash out throughout the winter?
It takes a while for the green sand to break down.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes about a year for it to break down. So that one's a fine one to put on. But I wouldn't put compost on now because that will just leach out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well,
thank you.
So thank you, Liz.
Thanks, Joni.
Yeah, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
And Liz with Garden Conversation.
And the grandmas.
And the grandmas. The Grandma Garden Conversation. Thank you so much. Always a fun time. Always run out of time on that one. It is 9:01, and you're tuned to your community radio station, KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan.